Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, Richard and I go back to our mailbag and answer questions sent by you, the listener. Our mailbag will be empty after this show, essentially. So please replenish it. Send your questions to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or any other way to get them to Richard and me, and we'll put them on the list. And every couple of months, we go through this. And it's actually kind of fun. And we've gotten response from several of our listeners that this is... They like these shows, so we're going to keep doing it. First is from a poker player. He says he can play a 2-5 cash game for $50 an hour profit. He knows blackjack players who make more money per hour, but they also have higher travel expenses and get barred from casinos that may or may not let you play poker. Is there any compelling reason to pick blackjack over poker for the sole purpose of making the most money? If I can play poker for $50 an hour, have less travel expenses, can settle for the 2 to 3 casinos within an hour and a half drive of my home, and do not fear getting barred from the casino.
Yeah, I think it's a lifestyle question, right? Yes, you can go out and earn, assuming you have the bankroll, you can go out and earn $200 or $300 an hour, or maybe more, playing blackjack. But it means you're going to constantly be on the road. You are going to get thrown out of casinos, which may affect your ability to play poker in those casinos or casinos in that chain, right? There are people who have problems playing in the World Series of Poker because they've been 86th from Caesars properties. So that's something to take into consideration as well. And the other thing is, yes, you may be able to make $300 an hour counting cards at blackjack, but say you get in 3 or 4 hours, whereas poker, you can play 10 hours a day. So you can get in a lot more hours of poker than you can blackjack. But you know, one of the problems that I had with poker is, for me, it's a very unhealthy lifestyle because you're basically sitting in a chair for 8, 10, however many hours a day. So at least with blackjack, for me, there was a lot more walking around. You know, there's a lot of scouting involved for me. And so anyway, yeah, as I say, it's which kind of lifestyle do you want is the question.
And it's not, they're not mutually exclusive if you play them at separate casinos. If you have both skills and you go to, on occasional trips, you go to some casinos to play poker and some casinos to play blackjack, you can do them both. But it sounds like you're happy with $50 an hour profit, and so knock yourself out.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's not bad living, right? $50 an hour. There are a lot of people who'd kill for that job.
Yes, that's at 40 hours a week, that's 100 grand a year. A lot of people would like to try to struggle to live on that if they had to. On the Colin Jones interview, a listener asked about the Dead Man's Hand side bet. There's no online information about it, but someone has been playing it for over a year, and he simmed it and has a simple count for it. He's willing to have his email passed along to anyone who wants to know about the Dead Man's Hand. So he didn't really give us permission to post it in the show notes, but if you want to, that information, send an email to, either Richard, my regular address, or gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, and we'll post the email of the guy who has simmed it. How good it is, what the edge is, I have no idea. Here's a video poker question. This past weekend, a player played 9-6 jacks or better progressive machine at a local casino. The jackpot had already exceeded $1,800 for the Royal when he saw it. He knew it was greater than 100%. For a quarter machine, and he thought he found a gold mine. So he started pounding it. Initially, he quietly played the game, hoping to hit the Royal before other players found the opportunity. However, after about 20 hours of play, down about $1,400, still didn't get the Royal. Really tired, so frustrated, decided to quit. Just didn't care anymore. My question is, what would you do in the circumstance? Keep playing since it's positive EV? Set a limit, say 80% of the jackpot. If you don't hit, then quit. I understand you make money averaging on these machines, but you lose money on some machines if a Royal never shows up. How do you handle the frustration, especially when you think it's a favorable situation? All right, let's look at this. This game is indeed positive by about 0.25% before you include slot club mailers, promotions, comps, if any, and meter progressions. If these additionals are non-existent, which would be the case if you were not playing with a card or the casino had a real stingy slot club, this play is worth 0.25%, which is $2.50 an hour. Quarter machines playing at 800 hands an hour, which is moving along. It's nowhere near a record, but the average dollar makes it $1,000, so the math is easy. So 0.25% is $2.50. Now, if the benefits were worth 0.5%, which is generous in many places, it's still only worth $7.50 an hour. I would not call that a gold mine. Plus, as you found out, there's significant variance. Preservation of your total bankroll is important. Different players deal with that differently. I don't play on quarter progressives, but if this thing happened on a $2 progressive or something, have been there, done that, sometimes you have to take a break for whatever reason. If you don't have a partner to pass it on to, you just have to let it go. If you live, now this particular one is low enough that $2.50 an hour isn't going to excite too many people, that going home and sleeping and coming back tomorrow is a possibility. It may still be there. Dealing with the frustration is part of video poker. You usually lose. You're only going to hit that Royal 40,000 hands if you're playing 800 hands an hour. That's 60 hours, something like that. It doesn't happen every day. You're going to have losing sessions over and over again. Some people can handle that. You have to be able to handle that in order to play. If you have to have a positive score every day or you're miserable, you need to pick a different profession. Now, the idea of 80% of the jackpot quitting, I would have no part of that. Let's say I was at 1,800. Let's say I did, you know, when I played and I lost a lot of money. And now the progressive's at $1,900. When I come back tomorrow, it's a new day. It's $1,900. I'm ready to play. If $1,900 is a playable number for me, I'm in. The fact that I'm stuck, however much it is on this particular machine, is essentially irrelevant. Richard, anything to say?
Yeah, I remember two friends of mine that were blackjack card counters, and one of them was giving the other one a lot of flack because he had walked away from a positive shoe. And, you know, he was tired and he wanted to go to bed, and he walked away from a shoe that was positive. Now, this was back in Atlantic City in the days when it was positive off the top. So every shoe was positive, and he was tired and just decided to go to bed. And the other player just couldn't understand how he could do that. And he said, you know, I was tired. I'd played 10 or 12 hours or whatever already that day. And, you know, there's always another positive shoe. So I'm not really giving anything up. For me, the older I got, the more important it became to take better care of me. And
yes.
And I think, you know, if you got in 12 hours on a positive game, you should be happy. I played 12 hours with an edge. And I think you get deluded maybe because it's a progressive and someone else could hit it and it would now be gone. But that doesn't really matter. What matters is you played with an edge. And at the end of your life, you know, you are going to be somewhere close to whatever your expectation was for all the gambling you did. And the more positive bets you make, the more you will have won. And not worry about what today was or whether you hit that particular progressive.
Exactly. All right, moving on. This guy says he's a blackjack player that plays low limits. He's building a bankroll over the next year so he can play high limit blackjack. He plays for $20 to $30 a hand. He knows pit bosses do not really care about what he's doing. So his question is, should he take the player's card, knowing that it's unlikely they will see me counting because my bet spreads are too low? I know that I will not be able to count in these casinos that I played for low limits in. I'm still worried that somehow my name and face will be in a computer that all casinos can access and get my information. Richard, what should I do?
Well, just within the last 2 months, I saw an OSN flyer on someone who was spreading, I think it was 5 to 30 in red chips. And this is a flyer going out. So, you know, your idea that they're not going to care that your spread is so low is flawed. You know, they care because they're dumb and, you know, and you could get fired. So, you know, regular listeners to the show know that I'm like Nancy Reagan. Just say no to that player's card.
All right. No, somebody met me at Palace Station many moons ago. I believe him and have no recollection of that. I recollect Palace Station, but who I met that many years ago, don't know. He likes the Win Poker app, which has an analyze hand feature for the iPhone. So he can enter any hand and it'll tell him how to play it. So the question is, if he uses that discreetly, like a strategy card, is this an illegal edge to refer to and use? And my answer is, in Nevada, it's called felony if you use electronic device to help you in gambling. That's a technical answer, an accurate answer. Practically speaking, this rule is never enforced, so it's probably safe enough. But it is on the books. It can be enforced at any time. And it's black and white. If they catch you, it's pretty
right.
easy.
But if you're using a piece of paper, it's not illegal.
Right.
But, yeah.
So, I don't use phone apps for that, but it's probably safe enough if you do. But it is a felony.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. I'm just more, you know, that the... I would say do your homework, you know, practice the game at home on your Win Poker app until you can play it competently and you don't have to look up the hand, you know.
And that is easier said than done. There are...
I mean, I just want to add, I have a friend who got arrested because attached to his key ring was one of those counters like the bus driver has that you click every time someone walks in the door to count how many people are on the bus. He had one of those attached to his key ring, and they arrested him for possession of a cheating device. That he was somehow using that thing to count cards.
Was he using it to track aces or something?
He wasn't using it. It was just attached to his key ring. Right? I mean, so, yeah. So, you know, what Bob said is right. If they decide to arrest you, you know, they can. And then you're going to have to get a lawyer and you will probably get off. But, you know, you're going to have a major expense.
All right. Somebody else asked a tricky question. He played open face Pigao game, which I assume open face meant the dealer's cards were face up.
Yeah.
And he, I've never seen such a game, but the dealer, in her relief, didn't understand the rules. So
that
what
sounds
he,
good.
So what he and his friends are doing is intentionally fouling his hands in order to turn our losers into pushes. For example, he might play king-king in his low hand, but an ace-high in his high hand, in or necessary to make a losing hand into a push. Where that's illegal, you have your high hand has to be higher than your low hand, but the dealers didn't know that, so he could push that way. He received zero heat at $200 to $400 a bet, playing a total of four hands between the three of us. Biggest heat comes from the other players at the table.
Yeah, that's not unusual. Yeah, probably betting $5.
The question is, how do we feel about this? Are we essentially cheating because we aren't following the rules of the game? Are we simply gambling with an edge? We come off as guys drinking and having fun, which is what we're doing. So I think if surveillance ever did catch us, we could just say we didn't know the rules. To me, it feels like we're cheating. However, there are still hands that we simply cannot foul our way into a push. Well, okay, so you lose those. So my response to that is the play will last a lot longer when there are no other players at the tables. Other players are your enemy here. So if one or more of them will have a big mouth and they'll say the wrong thing, the jig is up. So if there's three of you, try to find an empty table and each of you play two hands or something so that the three of you can monopolize the table. If other players are your enemy. Now, so far as whether it's cheating or not, my opinion is not your job to teach the casino how to run the game. So long as the casino doesn't correct you and say, cut it out, you're probably safe doing it. If they tell you to stop or they educate the dealers on keeping their cards face down until you've played your hand, or the high hand must be higher than the low hand, then you need to stop. Richard.
Yeah, I mean, Bob Nersessian has said on the show many times that it's the casino's responsibility to police their games. So, you know, that does not mean that some, you know, management guy with a burr up his ass isn't going to have you arrested. That could happen. And it also, it's a different story if this is one night or if you... you know, go back every day and pound this game into submission, they're going to get really pissed. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think it's a gray area, you know.
You found it with some friends, you would play it until, for at least
tonight. I would definitely play it. Yeah, but I would realize that, you know, I may have some consequences to deal with.
Okay. Next question. Is there an equivalent to U-Stake or Stake Kings, which are both from poker, for AP blackjack players? I perfected my game, but I'm struggling to create a decent bankroll. Richard.
There is none that I know of, and I would not recommend it to anybody thinking of doing it from the staking side. I've known quite a few people, you know, who tried this idea of staking other players, and it has usually worked out badly. You know, if you read Colin Jones' new book, 21st Century...
Card Counter.
I don't want to say the wrong one, because there's also a 21st Century Blackjack, which is not a good book. You know, he has several stories in there of people who started with bankrolls, you know, as low as, I think, $600. I mean, so you can start with a very small bankroll, and if you pursue it correctly, you can build a bankroll and turn into a successful player.
If you have perfected your game, which is easier to say than it is to do.
Yeah, good point.
Is you may consider investing in one of Blackjack Apprentice's boot camps. This will set you back $3,000, but you go and your game is evaluated by good players. And if they agree that you're as good as you imply you are, some of them are looking for teammates. And they have, Colin has a number of strong players who I think it's voluntary. I don't know. Maybe he pays them. But come and help run the boot camp. And hooking up with them will allow you will become known. Your game will be evaluated, and possibly you can meet somebody who might be willing to try you out as a team member. But you have to meet people. It's a one-on-one basis. There are social skills involved, but having somebody blind who doesn't know you other than saying, yep, I'm good, I perfected it.
Here's the other thing. I think it would be a really, really rare person that has learned to count cards and has never bet big money to be able to go out and successfully go out and start betting a lot of money. Because you learn so much going through those earlier stages and building that bankroll. You know, you're going to know nothing about casino comportment. If you've never been out playing, and to just go out and start betting hundreds or thousands of dollars when you've never learned any of that stuff, you're just not going to be, you're not going to be good enough. So, you know, there's real value in working your way up because you're going to learn a lot along the way.
And I found in video poker, which is different, not what he asked, but when you're hungry and actively searching for all the edges, you're doing better than if you're not so hungry and you have, you know, that whether or not you have a car to drive or not, it's not dependent on how well you do. I've had many emails from people saying, if I really believed in the system I've been teaching, then I would be willing to bankroll them because they've succeeded at everything that they've ever done. And they know that they could succeed at this if given the chance. And that if I believed in what I was doing, that I would be willing to bankroll them. And my answer is invariably take a hike. That is just not something I'm interested in. All right. Next question. What casino game do you hate playing, Richard?
I would say of the games that I have played, the absolute worst for me was playing a progressive slot machine.
Yes.
Back in the days when you had to feed in the coins and pull the handle. And yeah, that was torture.
Yes. Slot progressives strike me as is awful. Now, I'm only going to be playing games where I have the edge, but there's still I personally, you know, like the sound effects of Quick Quads and don't like the sound effects of Dream Card. So when the machine keeps going Dream Card over and over again, I find that obnoxious. So
can't you ask them to turn that off?
You can ask all you want, but but there's usually a bank of three or four or six of them, and other people like hearing it. So yeah. But basically, I'm not into hating. So there's if a change machine could find a way to give me a positive return, I might play that.
You know, I just want to flip that. The game I enjoy playing is Craps, because you get to stand up. I hate that so many casinos have gone to this idea that you must sit in the chair when you play. I think they do this because they don't really understand why they're doing it. They just have decided that that's a rule for some reason. So I like to be able to stand up, and I liked it much more in the old days when they wouldn't give you a problem if you wanted to stand up at the blackjack table or whatever other game you were playing. But the other thing, conversely, if you're on a crap game for a really long time, sometimes I have asked for a chair and they won't allow it, even when, you know, like there'll be a dead blackjack game with no dealer at it right behind me and I could just pull the chair around, you know, 3 feet, and they'll say, no, you're not allowed to sit.
They would if you were losing.
No, I mean, even in cases where you're losing sometimes. Again, casinos do stupid things sometimes, you know. I guess if I was losing more than I was losing in that particular case. And I would add that I'm not just out there blindly shooting craps, you know.
Yes,
I'm talking about playing with an edge. So,
do either of you, given the season, have any old Christmas promotions or plays that come to mind to share? Even taking big players or celebrities somewhere on Christmas time when they'd least expect it.
Only two Christmas stories come to mind. One is Tommy Hyland's dressing up as Santa Claus,
yes,
and in Atlantic City, and eventually, you know, they tapped him on the shoulder and told him, "Sorry, Santa, we don't want your action anymore."
Was this in Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia? Oh, yeah. No,
sports-wise, he's famous for booing Santa Claus.
Right. The other thing is, when I first moved to town back in the late 70s, early 80s, Binion's Horseshoe used to offer 2-1 on either Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, 2-1 on blackjack. And
was it limited to $5 bets or something?
Eventually. I think the limit was much higher when I first got here, which was 77. But within a year or two, it got limited to $5 bets. And it became like a convention for card counters. There weren't that many card counters back then, but, you know, everybody would show up for that, even though it was only $5 bets. I know Peter Griffin used to come every year. That was one of his, because it was also single deck. So that was always kind of a fun event, because you would get to see lots of people that you don't get to see all the time.
The one I want to talk about was earlier in Christmas, like for a couple weeks in December, 2 years in a row at the Rio here in Las Vegas. They would give away a free scratcher and a football entry for every $25
jackpot. $25 jackpot? Wow.
So they started off and they had some dollar Deuces Wild games. It's a 98.9 game, but it paid $25 for four of a kind, which is... it happens on those games about every 16 hands. The scratchers, so that's the game players gravitated to, and that game was shut down quickly, and the players who played it were barred. The scratchers were worth about $250 an hour, as I recall. $250 a card, as I recall. They had $10.7 double bonus, where straights and higher guaranteed the ticket. And they recognized these games were popular, so they made them coin droppers, so that you put in $5 tokens, and if you got a pair of jacks, 5 tokens fell into the king. If you got a straight, 25 tokens. So, and they set them to the slowest speed they could. So when they the cards would come out, blink, 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 blink. But, so this tended to tick off the players. So the players got, so during graveyard, you can get 2 machines often, which was useful because the machine would light up and then you'd hold it there. And then while you would play the others, there's a lot of cheating going on. Players would have 2 machines. One would light up for a straight, and they turn on their change light and play the other one. And the change girl would come by and get the straight, pay them off. Then they turn off the light, and that change girl would go away. And when she was several rows away, turn on the light again for the same straight. You could get paid many times for the same.
Wow.
It got to be, you would teach, they would pay you a scratcher. And so you teach, and the scratchers are worth about $250. That if a change girl lined them upright, she could give you 3 scratchers, and it would look to the eye in the sky like it was one. And a $2 tip was plenty of incentive to get the girls to do this. So you players were tipping hundreds of dollars a day at this dollar game, and they would be getting thousands of extra tickets.
Wow.
They also had the football ticket was a parlay, not parlay, but who was going to win on the next week, where you picked it. And so it was, so if you had 1,000 of those or 2,000 of those and you filled them out intelligently, you had decent chances, but it's tedious to fill out that many cards. And so eventually I got a group of people and we collected them and sold them to a competing group. And that was good for everybody. We got something like 25 cents a piece for them, and they got them, and they got to fill them out. All right. We are going to take a commercial break. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. Between now and December 24th, everything in the casino is half price if you use your points. This is an annual promotion. From the end of the NFR rodeo to Christmas Eve. Next year, the NFR rodeo will end earlier in the month. And so there'll be more chances to use it. So you can collect points all year long to spend. There are people who buy their alcohol at the gift shops. With half price, it's a much better deal. Even though the markup in casino gift shops is somewhat higher, 50% off is a good deal. Next semester of free video poker classes begins Tuesday, January 14th. The first class will be Jacks Are Better. The schedule is posted at bobdancer.com. At predicted.org, there's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. There are a number of different bets, for example, whether Trump will be impeached within certain time periods, how many tweets he will make, how many tweets Andrew Yang will make in a week. And the over-under numbers are quite high in Yang's case, which didn't follow him. I had no idea he tweeted so much, but he clearly sounds like a presidential worthy to me. Gambling with an Edge listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the game. The game of the week is Faith Card Frenzy. You may play this game anywhere from 6 coins up to 10 coins with the odds improving as you increase your bet. In this game, full houses and quads, including jacks, queens, kings, and aces, return a lot more than usual. To make the math work, all pay schedule categories are bumped up, meaning that you need to learn an entirely new strategy to play this game. In addition, no games of this variety were released, returning more than 99%, so it would take a pretty big promotion to make this game worth playing. All right, we are back to questions from our listeners. Someone wants to know about the legendary comedian Norm Macdonald. Do we have any questions about him? And I do not. Richard.
Any questions
about him? Any good stories? He's a degenerate gambler, apparently.
I don't know that he's a degenerate gambler. I met him once. I was introduced by a mutual friend. We were talking about the idea of using him as a big player on some plays. Seemed like a very nice guy. You know, those kind of things are really difficult to ever work out because celebrities and athletes and things just, they have a lot going on in their life and they're not used to taking directions. And so anyway, nothing ever worked out, but we had a nice enough, you know, meeting, and that's all I know about Norm Macdonald.
Yeah.
I know he plays a lot of poker, so he's here in Vegas a lot. He's in the poker rooms, so.
Okay, new question. With advantage play becoming increasingly competitive, is there a proper etiquette that you suggest to follow when meeting or approaching another AP in a casino? What are the some... We'll start with that. There's a further follow-up question. I'm going to give my answer first, which is going to be different than Richard's. I'm somewhat of a special case, but when I recognize someone in a casino, I quietly nod in their direction if I'm open to stopping and chatting. If they respond, fine. If they don't, then I don't really insist on something. I often get players coming up to me in casinos thanking me for teaching them how to gamble intelligently. I basically always have a minute or two for anybody like this. I have longer for special friends, but not really for people I don't know. After a couple minutes, if this is the first time I met them, I'll basically say it was really nice to meet you, but I am working here and I got to get busy. I understand that I'm a unique case, and an AP in video poker is different than an AP in table games because video poker APs are used to giving their real names and ID for W2G purposes. And many table game players aren't. So, Richard, how do you handle this?
As a general rule, I would say don't approach them in the casino. Maybe in the bathroom because there are no cameras in the bathroom. But you don't know who might be sitting in a stall and overhear you. So it's really kind of a bad idea. So if I do approach someone, I will walk up to them and point to my wrist and say, "Do you know what time it is?" Which kind of automatically makes them look at a watch. And then while they're doing that, I will say, "Is it safe to talk to you in here? Or do you want to talk outside somewhere?" And the reason for that is if surveillance is watching either one of us, it looks like I've asked the guy what time it is. And then, you know, depending on what his answer is, I would, if I'm going to talk to him, I would probably go outside or into the bathroom and just exchange phone numbers or something, texts, so that we can talk outside the casino, not in the casino. You just don't know who has heat and who doesn't. You know, the first time I got put into Griffin, it was because somebody came up to me in a casino and talked to me that had heat on them. And the fact that they talked to me basically burned me in a casino where I was in golden. So you just don't want to put heat on somebody without, you know, realizing it. So
very good. So we're done with our questions. For our mailbag is now empty officially. So it's up to you, our listeners, to fill it up again. So what's left in our show is our recommendations. For me, I recently returned from a week-long cruise on Norwegian Cruise Lines. And somebody told me that if you own 100 or more shares of stock in NCL, currently priced about $55 a share, you can apply and receive a $100 discount off of every NCL cruise. Now, I know players who take numerous weeks of these cruises every year. Taking five cruises, for example, gives you $500, which is 9% of the purchase price per year. I don't know how good of a value the stock is overall, but for frequent cruisers, it seems to be a no-brainer to buy the stock. I've heard that other cruise lines have similar deals.
Wow, that's a good one. Yeah. My recommendation this week is for anybody who appreciates photography, there's a guy on Instagram, and his handle is JuneGruffy_. So like photography, except it's JuneGruffy_. And he's a Japanese photographer who takes these amazing pictures of Tokyo at night. And they're just beautiful. So anyway, if you're on Instagram and you like photography or you like Japan, check him out, because I just find his photography amazing.
And I actually want to add another one. It may not qualify as a real recommendation, but you get it for free, so listen up. Bonnie and I have honorary grandkids. These are a boy and a girl who are the children of some friends. And Bonnie and I have no other grandkids, and so we've kind of adopted them and do all the stupid things for them that grandparents usually do. The boy is good at math, but not so good at reading. And so he's been assigned some books to read and has asked me to read them and talk to him about them to better prepare him for the tests. So I did. So I've done this a number of books. The most recent book I read was called Shooting Kabul, K-A-B-U-L, meaning capital. Is that the capital of Afghanistan? I'm not sure. It's a very interesting story. The hero is a 11-year-old boy, but the story is well told and enjoyable. I found it. I enjoy novels, and I was surprised that I found a story that is clearly geared for junior high school age kids to be interesting, and yet this one qualified. So if you have a time, check out Shooting Kabul. I'm sure you can get it from your library, and it's worth your time.
Yeah, great. I you know what? Since you gave two, I'm going to sort of do a second one, which I may have talked about before. I found JuneGruffy through something called Five Bullet Friday, which is an email blast that Tim Ferriss sends out every Friday. And it's just five very short recommendations. It's one of the reasons why we started doing these recommendations is he sends out this email with five things he recommends. And it could be a guy on Instagram. It could be an article that he read, a book he read. One of the five is always, the last one is always a quote he is pondering. but anyway, so you might want to check that out as well. It's called Five Bullet Friday. If you just Google that, it'll be in the show notes.
Very good. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.